The 12-step process we have been journeying from the very beginning of realizing that we have a problem, admitted that we were powerless over our addiction. Then we get to the point where we realize that a power greater than ourselves can intercede and help us through this process, and made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Then we go to making a searching and fearless moral inventory and admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Last week, we were talking about being entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And now, step 7 is what we are dealing with this week on Recovery Now. Hello, this is Ned Wicker, and we're going to be talking about humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, and what exactly does that mean? Alongside, as usual, is my dear friend, the Reverend Dr. Dan Gieding. Wife Debbie Wicker is here, and on the telephone, once again this week, is dear friend Joe Herzanek, the author of Why Don't They Just Quit, and a gentleman who works with the jail community out in Boulder, Colorado, and bringing that message of hope to those behind bars. But we're entirely ready to have God. Now we are, for the first time, actually asking God to do something. And Dan, we've been inching up to the line, and now we're sort of at the point where we're saying, God, will you do something for me?
And I think that that is a wonderful thing that we can look at, not just the relationship with one-on-one and with ourselves, but we're going to that other dimension of going to a power greater than ourselves and that. And so what I want to do is give Debbie Wicker the microphone, and she's going to start our program off today with some questions.
Yes, hello everyone. Joe, I guess the question I have is, as I've been going through 12-step with people, the problem that we've really run into that has been a huge stumbling block, especially, you know, for step 6 and 7, is they have such low self-esteem that when they see the word defects or shortcomings, you know, they felt like they've lived their whole life, and all they've ever focused on and all anyone else has ever focused on is shortcomings and defects. So because of their low self-esteem, it's very difficult for them to really humbly ask to remove the shortcomings because it's such a painful area. Have you noticed that a lot in your work?
I have, and again, great to be back on the show with you guys, but I think that we're supposed to have a healthy level of self-esteem, and so you might ask, well, where does that come from? We're all nurtured in some environment, and sadly, not everyone has really affirming and loving and caring parents that really nurture this healthy self-esteem in their kids. And over time, if we don't hear encouraging words, we start to subconsciously anyway think, well, maybe there's something wrong with me. And I see this a lot within the recovery community. It's everywhere, really, but even more so in those who are struggling with some substance issue. But I think, you know, we're told we're made in the image of God, and I think we're here on purpose and for a purpose. But if we lose that, if we lose our focus and wonder what life is all about and why am I here, we can start to become fairly negative. If you just look at the news, I mean, the news is not encouraging. It tells you all the bad things that happened in the world. And so we have to really work on having a healthy self-esteem and then keeping a balance at the same time. We don't want to become arrogant and haughty and so forth. But a healthy self-esteem gives us that feeling of accomplishment that we can go out and handle whatever life throws our way. And I know with my own 3 kids, I've tried to develop that in them, and so far they seem to be doing okay. But I know what you're talking about when you mention that.
I, as Debbie was asking the question, I was having the a vision of the Cowardly Lion going before the Wizard of Oz and afraid to ask. Well, my question is for you, Joe. Last week we were talking about step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And step seven says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And what's the difference between the two? Or why can't you take step seven and kind of hook it on the end of step six?
Well, you know, in a way you sort of can, but there is a difference. Step six is where we list our character defects. We sort of do a self-examination. We do it with a sponsor or someone we trust. We write out our life story. We find out the areas that we've fallen short. And we become honest with ourselves, and we realize that there's work that needs to be done. Now, in step seven, where it says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, there's a lot going on in that step just all by itself. First of all, humbly. It's a humbling experience to walk into your first 12-step meeting or your first few, and then to realize that these character defects that I have all by myself, I haven't done very well. And maybe there is this higher power, this benevolent God who really wants me to enjoy life and to help me in this process. But for the grace of God, who knows where anybody might be. But I think, alcohol and drug abuse can be a pretty humbling experience. And once we accept that, yes, I am, I'm in that group, I can't control my use, every time I try, it goes bad, and so I need to just abstain and give up on that. That's the one thing that we can do, you might say, perfectly. We can not, if we abstain 100% from psychoactive drugs and alcohol, we will not become drunk or strung out. But other things, like shortcomings, where I'm impatient, or I get angry easily, or maybe I've been a procrastinator or kind of lazy, and maybe the last few years of my alcohol and drug use, I really didn't work much at all, and, these are bad habits that we need to overcome. And when we admit that we need him, meaning this benevolent, loving God that we've come to believe in, to help us in the process, that's just a win-win situation.
I think when you had mentioned this step is something all in itself very powerful. The one thing is that sometimes people have a misappropriation of what they think a word might mean, and it sort of goes on with Deppy's question about shortcomings and how people can feel about that. But I also think of the word humbling. I think you did well in explaining that when somebody comes to a meeting, and that the intent of the step is not humiliation. It's humbling and really knowing that the air is out of our balloons, and we have a true asset of our strengths and our weaknesses, but truly to know who we are as persons, and then knowing that our higher power is not there one to make it a humiliating experience, but that whatever is pointed out and whatever comes to the surface in our awareness is that we can grow, and it does not have to get in the way of a very fulfilling life and a life that we can embrace and know not only our light sides, but also that the dark side, that we have been accepted and loved and forgiven. And
I agree. And the word itself has really gotten a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be thought of as humble necessarily. We live in a society that, as one example, I can remember growing up, and Muhammad Ali was a great boxer, and he was fun to watch, and he said some pretty outrageous things at times. And one of the things he said is, hard to be humble when you're as great as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he used that to sort of pump himself up. But in reality, and I think even today, you know, his attitude is quite different. He understands that that there is a God out there, and that there's something bigger going on than just me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was interesting coming through this the election season of McCain and Obama was a memorable thing was at the Republican convention when John McCain explained how he came to the end of himself and realized he, you know, had his catharsis that he wasn't the all-powerful after that that experience of being captured, and that, and I think so many have come to that place also that they have that renewal when they see what they've been a prisoner to of their addiction, and now coming to the place that I can be so much more than what I ever was.
Absolutely, and you know, even though substance use and all the consequences and problems that it creates is a humbling experience. We don't need to necessarily connect that with humiliation. You know, humble is from the 12-step point of view is a belief that there is a benevolent power out there that actually wants to be involved in our lives, help us enjoy life, overcome not just our problem with uncontrolled alcohol and drug use, but help us overcome our personal issues that we struggle with. Maybe some of them are even kind of in our DNA. I mean, people worry and get depressed and frustrated, and you may have that as a family trait. You may have several relatives that do the same thing, but you know, with God's help, we can overcome. We can become more optimistic. We can have a different outlook on life. Life can go well. Much of the time. Unfortunately, we do live in a world that not everybody's working the 12 steps, if you know what I mean. There are a lot of people out there that are just frustrating, that pull our chain, so to speak, and you know, we get lots of opportunities to practice being patient and so forth. And with God's help, we're able to do all that.
This afternoon, during one of my my weekly groups, a young lady looked at me and she was questioning the necessity of step number 3 and going beyond that, you know, admitting to God and humbly asking God to remove shortcomings. And this was very problematic for her. In working with the folks that you work with, do you get the same sort of pushback on the idea of God interceding in their life and wanting to be a partner and wanting to help them?
Well, the spiritual part of the program is really a struggle for many people. But, you know, when we think about step 3, for instance, made a decision to turn our life and will over the care of God as we understand Him, really, what we're talking about is getting our will and God's will kind of going down the same road. A lot of people interpret that to mean that I have to do all these things that I really don't care about doing. I have to do all kinds of volunteer work and work the rescue mission. But really, God's will and our will, I mean, if we get our life and His will going down the same road, it's typically something that we're going to enjoy and a much better life than when I had self-will run riot, you might say.
And, you know, one of the things along with that is getting our will is that I've met many recovery people said that it's not just wanting to, but willing to do it, whether they want to do it or not. That's not the issue. But to be willing to do it, and the prayer sometimes that I know that I have to pray to live a healthy life is sometimes put the desire in me, God, make me willing to be willing, and start with that, and to grow in that process. And I also think that also, as we grow in recovery and as we come to step seven and have been on this journey, that our understanding of our Creator and our higher power, it seems as we work the program that that always grows in my understanding of God, and my higher power is much different than what it was when I first started. I always look at that, my relationship to my higher power now is so different than it was 3 years ago because of what I have experienced. And many times what the recovering person has experienced also in doing this is that they've learned some valuable lessons that their addiction cost them but taught them to be wiser and to also to find the use of their addiction can be turned around to make them powerful people because they had gone through that pain, unfortunately, but they come out better individuals because of the recovery process.
Well, as much as we don't like pain, I mean, there's things we can learn in pain that we aren't able to learn in other ways sometimes. You know, and there's growing pains involved in becoming this mature, confident adult that can go out in the world and conquer the challenges that come his way and enjoy life. One of the things you mentioned just a second ago was your relationship with your higher power. What I have found for a lot of people, and for myself for that matter, my early years, if you were to mention God, I had this image that popped up of some religious background and some religious history, and it, you know, wasn't a pleasant scene. And what I found in the 12-step program, that just like it says, a relationship with the God as I understand him. It's not about being a Baptist, a Buddhist, a Presbyterian. It's about a personal relationship with a benevolent God who really wants to help me enjoy life. Now, who would want to fight that? I mean, if that's a true statement, and I believe it is, why would we want to fight that? Well, maybe because we've got some old tapes, or we see what goes on in some organized religions, and we say we just don't want to have any part of it. But the AA or the 12-step approach is totally different. You never hear about any particular faith-based or religious program. It's now not to say that we can't grow and get involved in something as we grow spiritually, but initially, it's this belief that a benevolent God wants to help me, and I need the help. I can't do it on my own.
The image that a lot of people have, Joe, is of stained glass windows and organ music, and a bad experience growing up in the church because mom dragged you off and you had to go and you didn't have any choice about it. They also have a very religious view of God. What can I do to become acceptable to that God? Where in the 12-step, as you're journeying down this path, it implies relationship, and it's what God has done to make me acceptable. It's all about what he has done. In step two, we say that we believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, and then we say we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And this is very much of a relationship, but I think a lot of times people just get turned off and put off about a God that they think is hovering over them, ready to strike at any moment.
And that's kind of what my early years of church involvement were. There was this judgmental being on a throne, and he was keeping score, and my scorecard wasn't looking very good at all. And I'm not saying that all religion is bad by any means, but I'm just saying that I wasn't ready for what we would now call this personal relationship with the higher power as I understand him. And I have found with many people that I talk with, they've had some almost horrific religious background experiences. So I think this is an area where we in recovery need to be patient, as well as the person who's trying to sort this all out. one of the words I really like is odyssey. And life is an odyssey, which is, means it's a long, wandering journey or spiritual quest. And there's a bigger purpose. What I found for myself, I used to be focused a lot on things, material things, and success, and up to a point, there's really nothing wrong with that. But what I realized after not too long in the program was that the really important things money can't buy. When we step into eternity or we're laying on our deathbed, the only thing that's going to really matter is who we loved and who loved us.
You know what? I really like that image of the odyssey, of the journey. And like you said, I think in our previous program on step six, it's right in the middle, and it's not at the beginning, and we don't find step seven at the beginning, and we don't put that up at the beginning. We have to start with the basics, and that is the powerlessness, knowing where we are in this relationship, and then having that grow. I remember doing a lecture for a spirituality group, and one of the things that we would act out with the recreation therapist was our own Garden of Eden story. And it was so much fun just to see the clients to take on the characters. They even became the bushes in the garden. And here we see Adam and Eve in the garden, God walking through the cool of the day, and they would act that out. And God just didn't rush over and grab them out of the bushes by their neck, but he always said, "Where are you?" And the step one is location. Here am I. And it was just amazing. But one of the things that happened, and I think it goes along with the five steps, is that one thing that they said that Adam and Eve were sent out of the garden. In the story, this creation story, it says, but God did one more thing for them, and that God made clothing for Adam and Eve. And many times, I think that it was so much fun to see how they acted with God as being gentle, you know, maybe very a vindictive God sending out. It just depended on who was doing the character of God and how they acted out these stories. But it was always something as they would come to talk about the clothing. What clothing did they need out in their recovery? What did they need in their recovery? And they made it their own recovery story. And I thought that that was very powerful in that, and to find that we all have a Garden of Eden story. But the power of that was that God made clothing for them. And then also, out of that narrative, it said that they could never go back into that garden, that there was a guard set there. And some of the application of that came out. Well, was that cruel? And someone said, well, maybe that's the best thing God ever did, because I don't have to go back where I've always failed and had somebody point my finger at me. And as we look at this, steps five and six and seven, as you said, it's time to get rid of these things and be set free. And that, learning how not to keep fishing in our guilt and in our shame, I think is real important. And I think this is what sometimes these steps talk us and look at, and using that old-fashioned creation story for people to see each one of our own stories and where can we be set free. But I think that as we have that journey like you were talking about, it starts to unwind and a pathway of hope develops.
Right, and I can look back at my own years, even before and after substance use, and I can look back and honestly say that, you know, the vast majority of my problems, the stressful, painful things going on in my life, were the result of a lot of poor choices that I made of my own free will. And, you know, I think we get caught up, as a society today, we very rarely just stop and be still, you might say, and just maybe try and listen to what this God might be trying to say to us, because I think he's around all the time. I recently went to a monastery in New Mexico, and you know, the theme at the monastery is a verse that says, be still and know that I am God. And one of the plaques that they have on in the bookstore there was a quote by Carl Jung. And Carl Jung is probably the godfather of psychotherapy and New Age thinking and things like that. But this monastery believes so strongly in this quote, and this is what it is. It says, bidden or not bidden, God is present. And Carl Jung, of all people, to make a statement like that. We want to deny that. We want to say we can handle our lives and pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and so forth. And some of that involves a healthy self-esteem, but when it's so much nicer when we have this benevolent God, this higher power that wants to join us in this process and help us when our own personal wisdom and strength doesn't seem to be enough.
And that is about the last word, Joe, as we're running out of time here. But I do want to thank you for your insights, not only this week with Step 7, but Step 6. And you've been a great friend through this process and coming on with us and giving us your insights. So I do thank you. And how?
I appreciate being on. Yeah.
How can people get that book? It's a wonderful book. Why Don't They Just Quit by Joe Herzanik, and how do they get a hold of that?
Well, there's a couple ways. You can go to one of our websites, which is whydon'tthejustquit.com, or you could also go to changinglivesfoundation.org, or you can go to Amazon or several different bookstores. But whydon'tthejustquit.com, changinglivesfoundation.org. Either one of those are good, not just to get the book itself, but there's a lot of resources and some you can archive, go through some old newsletters and things like that too.
Well, I appreciate that. Again, it's called Why Don't They Just Quit? Gives you insights you won't find in any other book on addiction and recovery. For those of you, families and friends, what you need to know about addiction and recovery. It's an absolute must-read, so we suggest you get that. Joe, thank you very much. As usual, Dan Geeting, thank you. Debbie at the controls, and with your question, that sort of got us going. Next week, we're going to be sort of going into review mode and going to be summarizing a lot of the. There's been a lot of discussion, a lot of talk, and we just want to keep you up to speed and keep you thinking about that 12-step process and maybe think about where you're at. Are you going, taking two steps forward and a couple steps back, as Joe was talking about in his own experience? And where are you in your experience? So we'll be talking about that next week. In the meantime, when you humbly ask God to remove your shortcomings, and when we go to God with an open heart and an honest and contrite heart, God receives us gladly and will do as we ask. So put your faith and your trust in the one who loves you dearly. This has been Recovery Now. I'm Ned Wicker. Thank you very much for listening, and God bless.